Behave What You Believe. That's the title I've given to this new series on Christian living. And the overall text for this series might well be a verse just outside the section we're looking at, chapter 5 and verse 15, where Paul says, "Be very careful then how you live." Be very careful then how you live. Not what you believe. And Jesus does make a great difference to our beliefs. And Jesus makes a great difference to our feelings. Christ makes a difference to heart and head, but essentially it's to life. That's the real difference that Christ makes. So our series on verses 25 to 32 is a basic skills course in Christian living. I wonder if you read in the newspapers last week about the Chancellor Gordon Brown's plans to expand the New Deal program. That's the program to help young people to find employment and to stay in employment. And at the budget, apparently, he's going to announce a package which will include a new four-week basic, what he calls, soft skills course, to be distinguished from a specific skills course which might do with learning such expertise as computerization. But the soft skills course has to do with basic ability for living at work. Apparently there are thousands and thousands of youngsters who lack the basics of knowing how to live at work. So this curriculum will contain such subjects as how to get up in the morning. Perhaps there are some here who might like to enroll in the course, some young folks or some older folks. Roger? Some of the other subjects include the following: how to shave. Gary, Ian, and others may find benefit from this New Deal program. Also includes the core curriculum, that is, brushing hair. And it would be invidious to mention any names just now. Brushing shoes, dressing appropriately for work, being punctual, behaving politely, looking your prospective employer straight in the eye. Things like that. Now, it may come as a surprise to a number of you that there are thousands and thousands of young folks who don't have these basic skills of living. And it may be a surprise to you further to know that there are multitudes of believers who are probably very hazy about basic Christian skills of living. And so this course, which Paul sets out for us in verses 25 and following, covers such basic subjects as truthfulness, controlling our temper, honesty, speech, kindness, and purity. Not a soft skills course, but very specific Christian basics. And this evening, the subject is truthfulness, and the text is verse 25. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we are all members of one body. Now, on the surface, this text seems to be stating the obvious. We seem to have here a very ordinary statement which any decent law-abiding citizen would subscribe to, be he or she an agnostic, an atheist, or a humanist, or whatever. But I want to try and show that this is no mere ordinary statement, but a precise Christian statement which carries a tremendous Christian dynamic behind it. And the first thing I want to say about this text is that it's the truth that leads to truthing for the Christian. Now, truthing is the new word that I've coined tonight instead of speaking truthfully, because it seems to me that truthing is almost the equivalent of living for the Christian. The person who's come to the truth will live out the truth in everything. That seems to be Paul's point here. Notice how verse 25 follows on from verse 21. In verse 21, Paul says, "You were taught in him in accordance with the truth that it is in Jesus." Verse 25, "Therefore each of you must speak truthfully." You see the connection? Receiving the truth as it is in Jesus and then speaking truthfully. So it's the truth that leads to truthing. So to put off falsehood is absolutely basic for the New Testament Christian convert. And the word that's used in the original for falsehood is our word pseudo. And elsewhere in the New Testament, that word is translated as a lie. Now, according to the New Testament, the Christian convert is somebody who has moved from the realm of the pseudo, or the lie, that is the kingdom of Satan, and moved into the realm of the truth, that is to say, the kingdom and lordship of Jesus Christ. Now, there's one important cross-reference I'd like you to turn to show that this is the New Testament's position. John's Gospel, chapter 8, and verse 44. The convert has moved from the kingdom of Satan, which is the kingdom of lies, to the kingdom of Christ, which is the kingdom of truth. And in John 8, verse 44, Jesus says, "You belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desire. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me." Back to verse 32, "Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." So these Christians at Ephesus, and all Christians anywhere and everywhere, are those who have moved from the realm of the lie to the realm of the truth, from the pseudo to the real. When I was a youngster at church, way, way back, these were the days when ladies coming to church used to wear fur coats, some of them anyway. And I can remember in a church when perhaps a visitor came in with a fur coat, looking at some of the other ladies, looking at this individual who came in. And I can well imagine them thinking to themselves, and perhaps whispering to the neighbor, looking at the fur coat, "Is it real? Or is it pseudo?" I suppose the same thing could be said about leather jackets, or pseudo leather jackets, or gold rings, or pseudo gold rings. It's really quite important to distinguish between the pseudo and the real. John Dixon, who's an Australian evangelist, at the beginning of one of his books on evangelism, says that most of us live in a society where great attempt is being made to persuade us that everything is cool. And the message that's given to young folks is that if they want to live a life, all they have to do is get Coke, Reeboks, a stereo, a girl or a guy, an occasional pass on exams or job promotion, and you're set. And the young Christian convert is the person who has discovered that this is pseudo, and has discovered that Jesus is real, has discovered that Jesus is the truth and the way and the life. John's Gospel, chapter 14, verse 6. The young convert leaves the world of the lie to enter into the kingdom of the truth. That's Jesus' kingdom. And so, from then on, will apply the truth in everything he or she does. Now, that's the New Testament picture of what conversion is, or one of the pictures that it gives. And for the first century New Testament Christian convert, things really were black and white. Once you came into the kingdom of truth, then you lived out the truth. You followed the truth. You practiced the truth. You spoke the truth. Now the question has to be asked, when society stops believing the truth of God and the truth of the gospel, does that mean it will stop behaving truthfully? That's quite an important question to ask, and I think that the answer ultimately, according to the New Testament, is yes. Yes. And people today, by and large, do not have knowledge of the truth or knowledge of God. I was hearing last week of a man who was brought before magistrate in one of the London boroughs, and he was a notorious no-gooder, and in this particular case he decided to defend himself, and the magistrate said, "You think it's wise to defend yourself? Wouldn't it be wiser to get somebody to defend you?" The man stood erect and said, "The Lord is my defender." To which the magistrate said, "Well, wouldn't it be wiser to get somebody who's a little better known around here?" And the Lord isn't known around here, is he? Not in our society, nor is truth. So what happens when the truth of the gospel evaporates? Well, it seems to me that truthfulness is liable to disappear. It really wasn't a surprise, was it, when Lord Archer was convicted of perjury? These kind of things happen in our society. Our society is fast becoming one which is characterized by deception and misunderstanding or misinformation. And that's increasingly clear about our politicians and the media. Now, I'm not being cynical. I hope I'm just being realistic. You see, in what's called our postmodern culture, absolute truth is denied. You just make up your own Disney truth, as it's called. It's just the truth as you see it. In our computerized culture, we are being influenced more and more by virtual reality. And that's not the same as actual reality. I don't know anything really about computer games, but I'm told by those who do that computer games are changing the way that we think. I was interested to notice yesterday about the new computer game that came into the shops called The Sims, being described as an addictive new computer game that allows you to recreate your own life in virtual suburbia. Apparently it was in the shops last week in America, and within days, and this is a quote from a journalist, "Users abandon the real world to spend 20 hours a day toying with an unreal world." Apparently in this game you can choose your own personality trait, and then you can design your own house, and then you go out into the world and you build your career and you earn money and you find romance. Virtual reality. And it seems to me that as this kind of culture increases, it's becoming more and more difficult to distinguish between what is virtual and what is actual. Our culture is telling us that you just say whatever you want to say. Oasis, not so long ago, sang, "I'm free to do whatever I want." Madonna sang, "Oh yeah, express yourself." And fairly recently, Cosmo magazine listed guilt as one of the 5 things most out of fashion in modern Britain. It told its readers, "Guilt is an unnecessary feeling." Well, of course it is. If you don't believe in the truth, if you don't believe there is truth, then why bother about telling the truth? Wouldn't you just want to say what suits your needs and suits your aims? I mean, if there isn't any any gospel truth or any God of truth or any absolute truth, what is to sanction us telling what is true? Ah, but it's different for Christians. The difference is for those who have heard the truth and received the truth as it is in Jesus. And then they are to truth it out in their lives. That's Paul's point. Why are we to do this? Well, the character of God demands it. God, according to Paul writing to Titus chapter 1 and verse 2, says God cannot lie. It's in his character, it's the essence of his being, this transparent truthfulness. God who cannot lie. It's according to the character of God, and truthfulness is according to the requirement of God. You remember David, after his great sin against Bathsheba, wrote that Psalm 51. And in that psalm, in verse 6, he said, surely God desires and requires truth in the inward part. In the inward part. So the point is, it's the truth that leads to truthing in everything. So let me ask you, do you see the link? Do you see the connection? Do you see the logic of it? And you see the implication as a Christian believer, to live this out in everything. That's the first point. The truth leads to truthing. And secondly, truthing takes place in relationship with others. Each of you speak truthfully to his neighbor. So truthfulness is not something you do to yourself. Well, I know someone once said famously, you have to be true to oneself above everything. But truthfulness here is not a private thing. Nor is it personal piety. You don't see in verses 25 right through to verse 32 any mention of prayer or reading the Bible or going to church. You see, it's not to do with the vertical relationship between a person and God, this truthfulness. It is on the horizontal relationship. It's to do with one person and another. Truthfulness is something that is expressed in relationship with others. Speak truthfully to your neighbor. Mind you, the point is that Paul has been making, it must spring from the power of Christian conversion. Verse 24, where do we see God today? Well, we see God in his true holiness and righteousness in those who are carrying out verses 25 to 32. Where do we see the God of truth? Verse 24, well, in those who practice truthfulness to others, which is a very powerful, powerful statement that he's making. It's tremendously exciting and exhilarating. And quite a challenge that you can see the God of truth and righteousness in the way that Christians act out truthfulness to others. So truthfulness is something that you express to others in relationship, and it's hard work. It involves vigorous putting off and putting on, putting off falsehood, putting on honesty. And that's not as easy as it sounds. Put off falsehood, says Paul, all falsehood, all dishonesty, all lies. But you say, what about a white lie? What about a white lie? I read in the newspaper about 3 weeks ago about a Sunday school superintendent whose name was Elspeth Mackay, and she was teaching her children about the Ten Commandments, and the subject of lying came up one day. And the minister's 9-year-old son asked the Sunday school superintendent if it was okay to tell little white lies occasionally. And the superintendent said, well, perhaps, but what did you have in mind? And he looked her in the eye and said, like when I tell you I like your haircut. Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings. Are white lies wrong? Well, I'm not going to give a simple answer, but rather try and give you a simple analysis of the problem. What's the problem that lies behind lying and sinning? What's the root cause? Well, the root cause, of course, of all sinning, and lying in particular, is self and self-centeredness. And human speech is the most profound way that we express ourselves. And with our speech, in trying to promote ourselves, we are trying to impress others, or sometimes get praise from others, or at least have others think well of us. And how do we do that? Well, sometimes we do that with human speech by covering up some of the bad things, and yes, telling porkies. And we're all very adept and able at that, actually, as human beings. The young George Washington, when his father asked him if he had cut down all the orange trees in his garden, famously replied, "I cannot tell a lie." To which Mark Twain said, "Well, he obviously wasn't very bright, was he?" Because we can all tell lies. You don't have to be bright to be able just to distort slightly, or invent slightly, or give different weight and emphasis slightly to a story, or to tell a half-truth and leave the other side away, to misstate, misinform, manipulate with the information in order to get somebody to think more highly of ourselves. And we can tell a lie without saying a word, by not speaking, by allowing something to be said which we know to be wrong. You can even lie with a look. But you see, self is the root of the problem. Self-centeredness. And I'm saying, trace it to the root. There's the analysis. And it's hard work and a life sentence to keep putting off falsehood, to keep putting off untruthfulness, because it doesn't tie in with the new self. Notice verse 24. Put on the new self, created to be like God in true holiness and righteousness. And that's why we've got to put off these things as they crowd in. Put off falsehood and put on honesty. That's to say, being open, ready to apologize if we know that we've misled or misinformed or manipulated others. It means transparency, or at least being as transparent as is appropriate and wise. It means sensitivity. And there's an excellent rule of thumb balance given in this matter in chapter 4 and verse 15, where the apostle says, "Speak the truth in love." Well, that's very wise, isn't it? That's an excellent rule of thumb principle to carry about with us. Not just speaking in love, because in our society, what does love mean? It means tolerating just about anything and everything that goes on. G.K. Chesterton said that tolerance is the virtue of those who don't believe much. And that could be written large over the central offices of our Scottish executive. But it's not just speaking lovingly, it's speaking the truth in love. And it's not just speaking the truth coldly and clinically. Yes, very orthodox, very straight. There must be this love with it. You see the balance that the apostle gets. Speaking the truth in love, actually it's just one participle that's used in verse 15. And here's my justification for this word. It literally is truthing in love. Truthing in love. What perfect balance the scripture has. Putting off falsehood, putting on honesty. Speaking the truth in love. It's hard work. And the apostle calls us vigorously to keep at this if we are to truth everything in life. So there it is. Truthing takes place in relationship with others. And thirdly, and finally, and briefly, the church depends upon truthing. In each of these six subjects in this basic skills course, Paul always gives a reason for the instruction that he gives. And the reason for this is given right at the end in verse 25. Speak truthfully. Why? For we are all members of one body. That's to say, the church. The fellowship of the church depends on trust And trust depends on truth. Falsehood destroys fellowship. And you know, perhaps that's the reason behind that terrifying story that we have in Acts chapter 5, the story of Ananias and Sapphira, right at the beginning of the Christian church. Ananias and Sapphira told a lie. They told a lie about the amount of cash that they gave to the special church project appeal. And the Lord struck them down dead. Now it seems terribly harsh and a real puzzle to us as we read this story in Acts chapter 5. But perhaps the reason behind this is to understand that the church is brand new with the life and truth of Jesus Christ, with brand new opportunities to spread the truth throughout the Roman Empire. And here right at the beginning, its credibility was being jeopardized and its very existence. And God wasn't going to allow the church to die before it had started for love of the salvation of people within the Roman empires and down the century. And so this very stern judgment took place to show that it's truth which builds up a fellowship, it's falsehood which destroys it. Unity in fellowship is impossible where there is untruthfulness. So Paul says, each one of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully, for we are all members of one body. Every member has to play his or her part in the body as far as truthfulness is concerned. Each one of you. Somebody might say, well, I can cut my finger and not damage myself. But in fact, that's not true. If you cut your finger, then your whole body will be damaged. You will feel it. And the same is true in the church. If one member fails in truthfulness, then the whole of the body is affected. So each one of you must speak the truth to his neighbor, for we're all members of one body. Each one of you. In the fellowship. And sometimes it just takes one person to make a start in the office, in the school, in the family, at a meeting, in a church organization, on an issue, to speak up truthfully and honestly. And God helping us, we will continue to go down that track. And in the darkness of our age, to try and reveal something of the light of God in his true righteousness and true holiness, so that others might see and catch a glimpse and come into the truth as it is in Jesus. May God give us grace tonight to respond to his word. Let's pray. God of truth, God of holiness and true righteousness, the one whose eyes see right into our hearts and read them like an open book, everything is known to you, O Lord, and we bow before such knowledge, confessing our weakness, our frailty, and our sinfulness. We thank you for your word, which gives guidance and direction and sets parameters for the way in which we should live and work. And we ask that as we think over the principles of your word, as we go to our homes, as we rise tomorrow, as we go out into the world, grant us the help of your Spirit to apply what we have heard. We thank you for this Christian life, this most glorious of callings that you have given to us, those of us who have received the truth as it is in Jesus. And we ask that we might be able to show, by the way we live, by the way we relate to others, and especially within the family of your people, that we are those who belong to the light, that we walk and live as children of the light of the gospel of your grace. Lord, hear this our prayer and answer, we ask, for Jesus Christ's sake. Amen.